Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Accused shooter Jared Loughner allegedly fired at least 30 shots with a single magazine last Saturday. Democratic House members are now drafting a bill to ban that kind of high-capacity ammunition, which had previously been outlawed under the now-expired assault weapons ban. And today, Arizona wildlife officers say they stopped Loughner at 7:30 Saturday morning for running a red light, but when they ran his name, there were no red flags. Should there have been? A college suspended him because of concerns about his mental health, and one Walmart refused to sell him that high-powered ammunition for the same reason. But there was no way to connect those two dots. We spoke with people close to a 1999 Secret Service study of assassins who wondered, should there be a law, like the one that applies to stalkers, to collect information about someone like Jared Loughner? MSNBC.com investigative reporter Bill Dedman joins us. We want to spend some time on this issue. Bill, welcome.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be with you.
And Bill, first to that 1999 study by a psychologist, a longtime agent, and others. They studied 83 people who'd made assassination attempts against American public figures. Just broadly, what did they find?
Well, first they found that many of the myths that we have about assassins just don't fit. First, there is no profile. There is no particular type of person. They found that they ranged from age from 16 to 73. They weren't all losers. They weren't all loners. About half had college education. They didn't fit the classic American profile of the lone assassin. Second, that they don't just snap. Maybe it's a hopeful thing, but they found that the idea that this idea to assassinate would just spring forth at the moment isn't what happens. Mm-hmm. That these people follow a long path of actions, some of which are common, but some of which might lead to discovery. The obvious, acquiring weapons, picking a target, surveilling a target, looking at security, but also often helpful actions, such as communicating their plans to others. They rarely threaten the target directly, but they often tell others, tomorrow will be the day, or as we saw recently on Jared Loughner's MySpace page, he announced his intention to kill a police officer. He said, now I can say it. I'm glad I didn't commit suicide. Now I can say I'm planning to kill a police officer. This sort of thing raises questions, of course. Who saw that and what actions did they take?
And how can possibly some of this be tracked? By the way, we're well aware. This is a pretty chilling conversation. We don't mean it to be so clinical. I mean, it's just really chilling to hear that while many of these attackers had not received a formal mental health evaluation, most had some sort of history of suicide attempts or suicidal thoughts, have had a documented history of feeling extremely depressed or desperate. So there's something going on, even though, as you said, it's just this huge spectrum of people. And to the specific question about tracking, there were so many incidents that Jared Loughner, in hindsight, was involved in, as we said, being kicked out of school. We also know that he was rejected by the military. He was said to be taking drugs. And we know that people who are struggling with mental health issues that are uncared for sometimes mask those by taking drugs or, you know, making their way into communities where they wouldn't be as noticed. We know Loughner might have followed the writings of an extremist, David Wynn Miller, who wrote about how verbs and nouns might exclude people from paying taxes. I know I've just really synopsized that, but, you know, some extreme writing. But to the tracking of this, we spoke to someone very close to those studies who didn't want to talk on the record but wondered out loud, why couldn't there be a way for some people to be tracked? Now, he mentioned the stalking laws. We mentioned yesterday that Arizona has some of the most expansive mental health laws in the country, meaning that the college professors, his friends who had concerns about Loughner, could have taken him to court. They could have petitioned a court to evaluate and see if he was a danger to himself or others. This means a huge outlay of time and money that family members may do, but it would seem like a college or a Walmart might not. Tell us more about these stalking laws that were very controversial when they first came about.
Well, one of the difficulties, of course, is that we're talking about very rare events, these sorts of attacks, but they're easier to spot, of course, in hindsight, because the behaviors that lead up to them are rather common. What we had in stalking was a mindset where if you reported that you were being stalked, a police officer back in before the 1990s would have said, well, I can't really help you because you haven't been attacked yet. If he kills you, then I can investigate. And after the well-known case of Robert Bardo, who killed the actress Rebecca Schaefer in 1989, 50 states passed stalking laws, which allowed, in effect, interventions. But in we don't have evidence in this case that Jerry Loughner, for example, was stalking Representative Giffords. So that specific law may not have applied here. But we still have a law enforcement mindset in general, which is we investigate crimes. Trying to intervene or prevent an attack is not seen as the purview of law enforcement, or in this case, perhaps of the community college, whose responsibilities may have ended at the point where Jared Loughner was suspended and then withdrew from school. If you were trying to intervene, you would ask a different set of questions, not just has this person committed a crime, but what significant changes have there been in this person's life? What stresses is he under? What do his friends say? What is his home environment like? And then, of course, has he acquired weapons? What interest has he shown in violence? What has he communicated to others about his plans? So, for example, an investigator taking that approach might have looked at his MySpace page and seen, oh, I plan to kill a police officer.
Right.
That would have rung a bell.
Right. Bill, we were talking about the 1989 stalker law that was enacted after Rebecca Schaefer, a beautiful young actress, was killed. And how controversial was that at the time? Were there questions about people's rights?
Oh, yes. There clearly were privacy concerns that were raised at the time. I think one of the connections to the assassination aspect of this is the idea that we have very narrow expectations of who might do this, and it's been very difficult for the Secret Service to train themselves to realize that profiles are dangerous, that because they lead you away from an actual attacker and might lead you toward wasting your time on people who are not dangerous. And I'm sure that would be, in terms of the kind of law you're discussing, that would be the fear of local law enforcement, is that this will be wasting our time. But profiles can waste your time. Let me give the one well-known example. I went to a Secret Service training in San Francisco, and they took us outside and showed the bullet mark on the St. Francis Hotel where Sarah Jane Moore missed Gerald Ford. Well, they'd taken her gun away the day before.
Right.
But the idea was, well, women don't shoot at presidents.
Right.
Assassins are men. They're lone men. Well, Lee Harvey Oswald. So they took her gun away. Well, she got another gun. She just didn't know that this one fired a little high and to the right. The idea that there's a narrow definition is a dangerous one. Another one is the idea that we have to choose between thinking that an assassination attempt like this is political or the person's just crazy. And these researchers say that was a false choice, and that clearly even those who are mentally ill, which may be no more than half of the attackers, even those had very clear motivations, which they often had expressed to people, motivations to be famous or to be killed or to save the world or in some perceived problem, sometimes to make money, and in a few instances to bring about some kind of political change. But much of the debate we've been having in the past week, was he crazy or was it political, is a false choice.
Right.
It could, in fact, be both or neither.
A corollary of that is, did the politics and the dialogue make him crazy, or was he crazy and found, or is someone crazy and finds an avenue handed to him by the politics and the dialogue? And that's a real dog chasing their tail, really, point. But to the idea of who this person might be so that it can be possibly prevented before it happens. Have you talked to law enforcement people about this idea of a tracking system? Again, this was suggested to us by someone, a big supporter, by the way, of the mentally ill, as well as someone involved in this investigation, who said, look, there's a way to do it to protect people's rights, but what you could do is give, let's say, a team of officers a database so that when someone calls from a Walmart and says, look, I don't want to get any more involved, but I'll just tell you, there was a guy who really bothered us and tried to buy bullets, that dot would be connected with others.
And these researchers are not talking about some massive government database pulling in information from your magazine subscriptions, but they're talking about a case database. They're talking about threat assessment. They're talking about what the Secret Service calls protective intelligence. In other words, they're saying, we'll open a file not just when someone alleges a crime is committed, but we'll open a file when someone says, hey, I'm worried about this person. He's sitting behind me in class, and he's scaring us all. And the campus police are investigating, and they resolve it as far as the campus is concerned. He's no longer on the campus, but that person's still in the community, and perhaps you'd open a file on that. Perhaps you'd go visit and sit down in the living room and talk with him and his parents.
And as we've seen, by the way, I just want to interject, and as we've seen, you'd think the campus would be concerned he might come back to that campus.
Well, of course, and maybe that black bag that we were told that he took out of his car that morning and his father saw him and chased him off, he ran off with that black bag, presumably containing the weapon and ammunition. Perhaps someone would have looked in that trunk. Perhaps that visit by a police officer would have prompted the parents.
And
say
by the way,
they were surprised to make a more thorough scan.
And by the way, Bill, under the stalker law, we understand that the way that's handled is that that person who has enough of reporting from someone who fears they're being stalked might get a knock on the door and someone sit down and talk with them. Is that the same thinking that could be applied to the...
Yes, and said talking with them in their own environment and not calling them into the police station, but talking with them in their home and assessing what their situation is there. This requires a lot of patience, you know, probably the law enforcement mindset would be that that's a false call, no crime. There's no box you can check that says, well, that was a burglary or that was an assault. So our systems aren't set up for that kind of intervention.
And perhaps they may be. Again, this is MSNBC.com investigative reporter Bill Dedman. We'll link you to his writing at hereandnow.org, where we'd also like to think of to hear from you what you think about the possibility of perhaps tracking people. We have, you know, fears of Big Brother, concerns about people's rights, but also it was done once before. After a brutal murder in 1989, stalker laws were passed, so is there precedent? Let us know what you think. It's something we'll continue to keep our eye on. Bill, thank you so much for weighing in.
My pleasure. Thank you.